Hello, everybody. Ian here. Before we start the show, I just want to have a brief little message here. We've been coming along a lot these past 2 months, and I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been listening. We've been getting a lot of kind notices, and we all really appreciate that. But we want to keep pushing this podcast forward, making it better and better. If you're a fellow podcasters out listening, we want to cross-promote. We'd love to promote your podcast on ours and vice versa. And also, if there's anybody out there who'd like to be, we have two commercial break spaces, and we want to know if there's anybody out there who wants to sponsor our podcast. We'd greatly appreciate it. We don't know if we're ready for the big leagues yet. Maybe not like stamps.com or carrierpigeon.com. That I might have just made one of those up, but you know, anything at all. On behalf of Nick, Cassie, and I, once again, we're all thankful for everybody who's listening, and let's get back to the show.
Coming at you from coast to coast, it's the Real Deal Podcast with your hosts, Ian Phillips and Cassie Grimaldi.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Real Deal Podcast. My name is Ian Phillips. I write about movies. I talk about movies. I watch movies. Just about everything movies. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Cassie Grimaldi.
Hi, everybody. I do those same things, but I won't go on about it for as long.
And we are joined this week by a special guest host, returning for his third time. I believe in sports they call that a hat trick. Professor of Comics, Mike Rogers. Mike, hey. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Great to be back. I'm not really sure what a hat trick is, but it has a nice ring to it.
Sports.
It means you do something three times, whatever. But we're glad to have Mike back. Because Mike is here, you know what that means. We've got a new comic book movie to talk about. This week we'll be reviewing X-Men: Days of Future Past. We'll be getting to that in a little bit. Just a little brief thing before we start. As you might have noticed, this past week we did not have a new episode up. We're going through a little bit of a transitional phase here on the podcast and trying to figure some things out. And due to technical difficulties, to say the least, we were not able to get a new episode up. But somewhere out there, there is an episode where Cassie and I do a review of Godzilla. And we are going to find it if it's the last thing we do. Right now, it's our Bigfoot / Loch Ness monster. But yeah. it's our lost episode. It's our lost episode. But,
yeah, much like our lives, we're going through a transitional period.
Yes. Yes, exactly. We're all, it's a very weird thing, but we'll see what happens. And we're glad that for everybody who's listening, this would be our 10th episode if we sold the Godzilla one. It's our 9th, but
so how are you going to counter that numbering thing? Are you going to call it number 9 or number 10?
Good question.
Maybe we'll call this number 9, and then we'll go back like the Lion King and call it
9.5. This is the Real Deal Podcast 9.5. Simba's pride. Oh, we just said that at the exact same time. That is weird. That was not planned at all. But All right. Anyway, guys, you want to dive right into this? We're going to try something a little different today. Instead of just talking about news items and TV, I just kind of wanted to focus on one news item, one bigger thing, and then kind of talk about some other things this week that have to do with it and the state of Hollywood in general. So anyway, around Memorial Day weekend, it was announced that Edgar Wright, who you might know as the director of Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, and Scott Pilgrim versus the World, one of my favorite directors working today. You guys fans of Edgar Wright?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I love Edgar Wright.
I love Scott Pilgrim. That's my groove right there. That's amazing.
That's one of my favorite movies, and while researching this, I just wanted to go back and watch Scott Pilgrim. I want to do that right now if it wasn't 11 o'clock at night.
I might totally do that.
On a Wednesday.
On a Wednesday. It's like an episode of It's Always Sunny, 11 p.m. on a Wednesday. But anyway, so Edgar Wright was going to work on the X-Men. You know what, Mike, do you want to explain that maybe? Since we have you here?
So Marvel's big venture in the next coming years is, well, obviously Guardians, but after that we've got Ant-Man coming up. And Ant-Man was like, has always been kind of a critical and like, it's been a little bit of a gamble for Marvel just because, you know, Ant-Man is one of those characters that's not quite well known, outside of the comics community. And, you know, he sounds kind of lame. Like Ant-Man is not exactly what you think of when you think of what you want to go see, like, on the big screen. But Edgar Wright has been attached to the project for a number of years now. It's kind of been at least, like, 2 or 3 years already. And that was getting people really hyped up. He shot some test footage for it. The test footage looked really awesome. There were a lot of, like, storyboards that were released. And I guess now he's not attached to the project anymore, which was really sad news for me. And yeah, he. I guess there were some creative differences there, but I don't know, Ian, if you want to go into that a little bit more.
As far as we know, Edgar Wright was working on the project for at least 8 years, where it was in development, and he was working on the script and working with Marvel. Paul Rudd was one of the people attached to the project. It was a really awesome idea, and apparently Marvel handed back some script rewrites for Edgar Wright, and the two of them were not meshing well together, so Edgar Wright decided, instead of to keep going on a movie that he didn't believe in, to just leave, which seems about as noble as a director, as good as Edgar Wright would do. But this doesn't happen very often. It must have been very hard for Edgar Wright, given that he's been working on this project for 8 years. That's a very long time. That means he's been working on it like since almost like before he's really become a really as big a name as he has. Right. But I just wanted to read. So I was doing some reading about him, and I wanted to read two paragraphs from this article. It's from Vince Mancini, who writes for the website Film Drunk, and it's about, in general, like what happens to writers on big projects in Hollywood. Let me just read this really quick. Meanwhile, the studios use those filmmakers' names and visions to attract talent. And oftentimes, the star remains contractually tied to the film even after the director or writer has dropped out, giving a studio still more incentive to hire a named director regardless of what they actually want to do with the project. These conflicts have probably existed as long as the movie business has existed, and you can't generalize to say that one side or the other is always right. But if you're a fan of seeing different types of stories and hearing a variety of storytelling voices represent mainstream film, you have to cheer people like Edgar Wright or Patty Jenkins, who put their career and pocketbooks on the line to make that happen. It's probably a lot easier, and certainly more lucrative, to just make whatever movie the studio wants to make. It takes a special type of person to turn down the money and whatever else to walk away when they no longer believe in the product. So this is just what I'm curious about. What do you guys think is the place of writers in Hollywood right now? Because I remember, do you guys remember we've had past discussions when we talked about The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Neighbors about how many voices there seem to be on like each movie? Like more like 20, it seems like 20 people writing a given movie.
I don't think movies are a writer's medium anymore. And as much as it sort of hurts me to say, I don't think that they're a writer's medium. But Edgar Wright, I think has a very signature directing style. So it's kind of really disheartening that he was so involved in the project. And it seemed like he would have so much control, and he didn't.
Yeah, I think, I mean... it's disheartening for me, too, because what I really like to do and what I want to do is write. And I feel like writing now is just more like, here's, like, the first draft, and you turn in your, like, your script, and then the studio and the director and executives attached to the project just kind of take that and mold it into whatever they want, like, which, I don't know. I mean, I think commercially that might be a good idea, but like, as far as creating a like good original like product that is new and entertains, it's definitely not a good thing.
I don't know. I think it's for sure not a good thing, and I think that people would still see movies like Godzilla and these blockbusters if they had more artistic integrity, I guess, is the phrase I'm looking for. People would definitely still go see them, and it makes no sense that they're being hijacked. I don't know about Ant-Man, because it's kind of a cult thing.
Yeah, I know very little about it.
But the thing is, to make a project like Ant-Man commercially viable is to put money into marketing. And that's, rather than concentrating on marketing people and studios and businesses are concentrating on everything, and it's putting your toes in too many waters. Does that make no? That's not a thing. That's not a phrase people
dipping
say.
Dipping your toes in. You're starting to invent a new phrase.
Yeah,
dipping your toes into too many pools.
I'm just picturing.
That's a good point. I don't.
And it's gonna blow up in everyone's faces.
Yeah. This is. There was another article I'm gonna point out in Forbes that was. I don't know if either of you got to read it. That was saying that fanboys have no effect on. Like the box office gross of a movie, and basically the writer was saying, I don't know if they're right or wrong, but it was an interesting point, was that the success of a big franchise movie or something based on something else doesn't depend on the fanboys, it depends on the casual moviegoers. Yeah. And like in some ways I'll consider myself that, in the fact that I'm like not a big comic book reader, and I will say I might be one of the people that the only reason I would have gone to see Ant-Man is because of Edgar Wright, and I mean that as no offense to the Ant-Man comic. I mean that is in I have no attachment or knowledge of the character, but I do have an attachment to Edgar Wright, and I will see basically anything that he directs.
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, because just coming from a comic standpoint, Ant-Man is this character who was created in the '60s, and he was this guy who can shrink really small, and he rides ants, and he controls ants. And then, he's got a partner that's the Wasp, and that's, like, his wife. And they literally interesting even a little bit until the 70s, when Ant-Man hits his wife. And then that's literally the only thing that ever, like, interesting happens with this guy's character, until he quits being Ant-Man and is just, like, this scientist guy. Yeah, and then there are two other iterations of Ant-Man that... I guess Edgar Wright and that whole team working on it kind of pulled to bring Paul Rudd's character into the movie.
Rudd have played Ant-Man?
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul Rudd was going to play Ant-Man, but he wasn't going to be the original Ant-Man of the comics. Hank Pym was cast as... I forget who they had cast as Hank Pym. But Paul Rudd was going to be, the funny guy who, inherits the suit and the powers and stuff like that.
Hey, the comedian, hey! Yeah,
which is based on a character...
I'm just Paul Rudd!
Yeah, which is based on the third Ant-Man, who was created, actually, by the guy who created Walking Dead. Which is a very tidbit there.
What's his name again?
That's Robert Kirkman.
Robert Kirkman, correct.
No fanboy... No one's going to see Ant-Man for that original, '60s character. It's the people who were attracted to, the name that's on it. And I think that's definitely a way that they're pulling people in with that name and then trying to mold it into whatever they want.
So who, I don't, just try and connect this away to my larger question. Who do you think has the most control in Hollywood right now in terms of just movie making? Whose idea of what is a movie that people want to see? Whose is most valuable? If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely makes sense to me. I think it's the studio heads, the guys that are seeing how much money the things are making, especially with comic book movies. Think about Man of Steel. That was not a movie that especially for hardcore comics fans, hit really well, but it made a lot of money, and money means more movies, more sequels, more of that style of things.
Yeah, but that's the problem. I think movies that hit well will make money too.
Yes, that's true. Man of Steel it made a decent amount of money, right?
Yeah, it made a ton of money. I mean, anytime you get Superman on the big screen with a trailer as good as the Man of Steel trailer, people are going to go see it, no matter how it turns out.
That's that's interesting that you say that, because like I said about the previous Fanboys article, they were talking about it's the casual moviegoer who has the most say in a Superman movie, but you say think the opposite. But I guess Superman's not, you don't even really need to read a Superman comic book to know Superman. Superman is basically an icon in American culture at this point.
Right.
While Ant-Man is not.
Ant-Man, no.
But if casual moviegoers are the ones deciding what sells the most tickets, then why don't studios try and take more risks on original properties? if they're saying that it's really hard to try and get a casual moviegoer to get attached. Like, the big reason that it seems like there's a lot more, like, adapting of, like, graphic novels and comic books and remakes and sequels and adaptations of old TV shows is because they think it'll be easier to sell people on a familiar product. But then they're also saying they want to sell people who aren't familiar with these products. So why not take a risk on something original? Do you guys think that would be worth it?
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. I don't think they know that.
What doesn't make sense is they're not taking risks on things that are good. And they're ruining everything.
But why? Yeah, I mean, I don't want to ask why aren't they taking risks on things that are good, but it seems really...
Because they're big dummies.
You heard it here first. Big girl. Dummies. But...
What?
So what basically... This? Oh, are we still there?
What is happening?
I'm still here.
Okay. Damn it, Nick. Okay, let me keep going. So what I was saying before is that people have talked about this. It seems like a lot of the originality and creative forces that used to be in Hollywood are now on TV. Yeah. And I still kind of can't figure out why that is. Like, Cassie is probably might be the biggest TV watcher of us all.
Yeah.
Do you think you could kind of tell us?
I'm not really sure. I think there is weirdly more creative control in TV. Except, I think people get more invested in TV shows now.
They do.
In terms of new technology. And I just think... I think people are more invested because there's better content. And I think there's more room for growth on TV economically and creatively.
Mm-hmm. But do you think... I feel like network executives are starting to get something that at least not on like NBC or CBS or ABC as we've talked about in the past, but like on cable, I think... they're starting to get something that studio executives for movies are not really understanding, and that now, like, every art and entertainment kind of has an afterlife that has to do with the internet. Like, going back to Edgar Wright, like, his movies, it's surprising, he's really not a big box office draw, but if you go to any fan site on the internet, you'll find that Edgar Wright's one of the most respected directors right now.
Right.
Yeah. He's also British. I wouldn't say Edgar Wright's a household name by any means.
No, he's not. He's not a household name, but he's a household name. If for anybody who watches movies at all, like, people know who he is. Like, even people who aren't always following, like, who works behind the scenes, like, they know who Edgar Wright is.
Right, and then I think even outside of those people, you say Edgar Wright, they might not know exactly who it is, but they'll be like, yeah, I think I heard that name before somewhere.
Yeah, exactly, and they know who...
Yeah.
And they know who Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are. But just on this, I just want to relate this. There was another news tidbit from this week. The Pete Holmes Show, which was on TBS... was canceled this week. I know Cassie was a big fan as well. I am a huge proponent of Pete Holmes, so he was given a show after Conan's late night show at 12 o'clock on TBS, and it was on for like a good few months. They got a decent run in, but the show, they didn't say the word canceled. They said was not renewed for more episodes, and it's running, which is just a nice way of saying they have passed on. They were not renewed.
Yeah.
They were brought to a farm upstate. but basically, Pete Holmes was someone I want to bring up because he was one of the most original, I think, voices on both in comedy, in late night, and on TV. So usually, have you seen full episode? And Mike, have you watched Pete Holmes at all?
I've only seen clips of it. I saw his X-Men stuff, I think, that you sent to me.
Those are really funny.
I've seen a couple other clips. For me, like, I definitely thought it was funny, but I thought, like I could see why it might be passed on. Like, the X-Men sketch was a really funny idea, but the execution, for me at least, could have been better. So I could see, like, maybe why it didn't get renewed. But I don't know. I think like shows like that should definitely be given the second season to grow and really find their place.
Yeah. And it was starting too early on. The whole format. So the format of the show, unlike a lot of like late night shows, it would start off with like their cold open, which was usually like a short pre-taped video. Pete's monologue, instead of being a bunch of jokes, like, here's what happened in the news today, which are getting really outdated, he would do a stand-up monologue and just kind of a stream of consciousness, what he was talking about. Then he'd have some other random skit, and then he'd have the celebrity interview, which is usually just somebody who's one of his comedian friends. And oftentimes, they'd be doing an interview in a random place. Like, his entire interview with Patton Oswalt was the two of them pretending to be asleep in a bed together. But what I want to say is he's a very original voice and like a very positive one, and he brought a new spin to a kind of stale formula. And it's really unfortunate to have see him go, because it kind of doesn't, it's not a good thing for people who try and have original voices.
I don't think TBS following Conan was the place for him, to be honest. I think he would have done better on, like, an IFC or a Sundance Channel or something.
Or even, yeah, like, probably Comedy Central, I think, would have been better. Like,
yeah, something different. I think TBS's brand right now is syndication, moving failing network shows to them.
American Dad reruns.
Yeah, I think Pete Holmes is honestly too much of a sweetheart to hack it in the traditional late night world.
Yeah.
But he has like a huge cult. Not yeah. even cult.
He hosts
huge following
yeah.
on
he hosts a, yeah.
the internet.
He hosts a podcast called You Made It Weird, which is actually one of my podcast inspirations. And he just goes on these really long, insightful interviews that are like hilarious and really enlightening, that sometimes will last 3 hours. It's really crazy. So he was also reinventing the podcast game. But it's also interesting what you were saying, Cassie, that like he might have belonged somewhere like IFC. So it seems more like on TV, there's more places for original voices because there are so many channels. You've kind of talked to me that there's like kind of a cable wilderness out there.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think TBS is a place
for anyone.
I don't know if it's the place for original comedy. I think TBS needs to do a bit of a rebrand, maybe.
But it's very funny.
It's I think they could be
even funnier.
Yeah. I think every network has the potential to be the best they can be if they would stop just showing
The Big Bang,
the Big
Theory.
Bang Theory and Modern Family.
Hey, Modern Family is a good show. I like that.
It kind of depends.
It is, but it's not new.
That's true.
It's true. But
Cougar Town is probably the best thing they have on the. Is that TBS or is that TBS?
Yeah, it's TBS. You're right. They picked it up after, and they're gonna have American
like
Dad now. But something. So I just wanted. We're all writers / aspiring writers on this podcast, and I know we all. Like, this news about Edgar Wright, the news about Pete Holmes is kind of a little heartbreaking in terms of what we want to do. But, like, I'm trying to look for the hopeful spots. And I think the hopeful spot
Job
is
openings.
That... I don't remember who I was talking to. It might have been one of you or somebody saying that, like... I think there is, like the executives are kind of ignoring, like, an ongoing... Like, something like the floodgates are about to open. Everything's about to change really soon.
Oh, yeah,
and they're
this
just kind
me,
of
I think.
This was you, and they're just kind of pushing it off.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a strike coming soon with various groups. I think that people need to back away from old models and long-term renewing comedies that get them viewers in Middle America. I think
it's Middle America's fault.
Middle America is not terrible, but
nice people and good cheese curds.
They're not going to make TV better.
Yes,
except for a select few of them.
I mean, I can't.
Educated on East Coast school? Just kidding. That was horrible. Thing.
Oh yeah, we have to try and not be sound elitist, but I know exactly what you're saying.
I don't know. I personally can't see a huge overhaul coming from that. I mean, it just. I think it's really important what gets marketed, even like especially with like the internet age and everything, you know. That sounds so stupid, but it's important, like, what is marketing well, what's selling well, and that
marketing is so important. So important.
Yes.
And
I think I can
totally see this kind of content still, like, remaining around. I just I think it'll change more in the movie end of the business than it will in TV.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the waters are so muddy right now that who could never be sure.
I love all the water metaphors we're using tonight.
Thank you.
It's okay. And LA is a town without water, so they need to get their feet wet. Whatever else water metaphors.
Yeah, it's Chinatown.
But, yes, it's Chinatown. But that's the point. So overall, just the point we want to try and make is that I think that anybody out there who wants to be creative should not hear this news and turn cynical. I think there's hope, and I really think the hope would lie in in having more faith in creative people. And when you have somebody as amazing as Edgar Wright on your movie, you probably shouldn't be giving him stupid script notes. All right. I think that's going to end our discussion here, everybody.
But we still like Hollywood.
We still love Hollywood. Definitely. And we still want to work in Hollywood.
I am still excited for Ant-Man, even without
Edgar
Wright.
You're not dumb.
Yes. I'll still see Ant-Man. I'm interested to see who else they have on. I know Mike will definitely see Ant-Man because he's more familiar. But will you see Ant-Man, Cassie?
Oh, yeah. It's called Ant-Man. It has Paul Rudd in it.
Yeah, if it has Paul Rudd in it, I will go see it. Paul Rudd seems like such a nice man.
Yeah.
To say the least. All right, everybody. We're going to take a really quick break here, but don't go anywhere, because when we come back, we're going to have a review of X-Men Days of Future Past. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast, everybody. It's time for Real Talk. This is where we take a current movie and review it. This week, we're going to talk about X-Men Days of Future Past. Just one quick side note before we start. Days of Future Past is directed by Bryan Singer, who, as you might know in real life, is dealing with some legal trouble stuff I don't really want to go into right now, but I just want to, it's very hard for me to even want to go see and talk about this movie because of what he's done in real life, but I'm going to try and be professional and separate the artist from the asshole. So anyway, we'll have an episode about that in the future, but for now, when we mention Bryan Singer, we're just going to talk about him as he relates to his directing in Days of Future Past. So anyway, we're going to just put up a spoiler alert right now. We're not going to spoil it in the synopsis, but some people are very picky about their spoilers. So anyway, Mike, you're the guest host here. Would you like to give us a little brief plot summary of Days of Future Past?
Absolutely, would be my pleasure. So basically what you got here is one of the best movies in a long, long time. So we got X-Men Days of Future Past. It takes place partly right after X-Men First Class, which is actually my favorite movie. Of all movies, I really, really like it.
What?
Yeah.
Ian and I feel like
a little different.
What? Wow.
You guys don't like First Class?
I was not a fan of First Class. I thought it was a cotton candy, crappy prequel version of X-Men.
No, it
we
was
can get into
awesome.
That.
Oh man.
I don't.
All right.
I was really mad that they didn't even established, they didn't even call him Magneto until the last 5 minutes. It was basically like watching the recent
because
Robin Hood remake where they don't call him Robin Hood until the very end.
Well, Magneto is his chosen name.
Sure.
You know.
Yes.
It's whatever.
But anyway,
we're
talking about X-Men
Mike,
Days
we're
going to
get into
past.
The summary and then we'll argue
All
about
right, sure.
that.
So basically, it's part sequel to First Class and part very far in the future sequel to the entire X-Men series. So it basically cuts back and forth between this desolate future where the X-Men are kind of like all but eradicated. There's only a couple of them left and they've been hunted down by these Sentinels, which are giant robots that are programmed to kill mutants. And it cuts back and forth between then and the 1970s, where we follow Xavier and Eric Magneto. and what's going on with them. But the whole plot is driven by the fact that Wolverine's mind gets sent back in time from the future into the past to prevent this Sentinel mutant apocalypse from happening. And he gets sent back into the 70s, where he is sent to stop Mystique from killing the guy who created these Sentinels, because that act kind of jumps forward into the whole thing of them getting out of control. And so they're basically going to go back and alter the timeline. And, you know, there's not that much going on in the future, except towards the end. It's basically takes place mostly in the groovy 70s, with a, with a very angsty Professor Xavier. And
who looks like he's in Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Oh, yes, absolutely, 100%. And
he looks like his character on the Scottish version of Shameless.
But anyway, I think that's a pretty good summary of the movie. There's a lot more plot details we'll try and get into. It's a really... But Mike, first off, what did you think of Days of Future Past?
I love Days of Future Past. This movie was made for me. Okay, you're talking to the guy who, like, as a kid and, like, still now, my two favorite things in comics, in movies, in any story is where, one, the characters are really old and it's in the future. I just think it's so cool. It's like, oh, like, that's why I like Batman Beyond, because it's like, oh, old Bruce Wayne, that's amazing. And the
who?
Batman Beyond, you know? You don't remember that cartoon?
Who? Oh my god.
Okay, anyway, my other favorite thing is when characters that, like, I love and, like, just know and love so well get brutally killed off on screen.
Interesting. So you really, is that why you like Game of Thrones so much?
I think that's probably a reason that I like Game of Thrones so much. But, yeah, it's...
Continue.
It's got both of those things in this one movie. Plus, I also really like period pieces that are based around, like, characters that I also know well. So this movie is absolutely created for me. I love the 70s, and I love, like, thinking about...
I love
thinking about what characters are doing at different ages than we usually follow them. I think that's a really interesting motive there. So anyway, it was set up for just greatness, and they had such an amazing cast come back for it. Ian McKellen is one of my favorite actors.
Let me say something about this.
Yeah.
This, nobody appreciates how good ensemble cast, like, each X-Men movie has. This movie had, I just looked it up, it had 8 different Oscar nominees in it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's pretty...
I mean...
More than... Yeah, it's set... It broke some... Apparently it broke... I think the event...
More than August Osage County?
More Oscar nominees than August Osage County. But, Mike, I'm going to agree with you on most things. I think, besides Spider-Man, I was really obsessed with the X-Men movies, and I loved the comics as a kid. And the first two X-Men movies, X-Men 1, X-2, are two of my favorites. I've never seen The Last Stand, as I never wanted to.
Oh, my God, Ian.
Or the other Wolverine movies, but
That's okay.
Yeah, I figured it was okay, but I didn't know how excited I was for Days of Future Past. I lost faith in it, but I really enjoyed it. I loved... what it did for all the characters, like you said, put them in different places, both, like, in a different decade. Mm-hmm. I really liked how it took Professor X and took away his powers.
Yeah.
And it reminded me, it was one of the reasons I also liked Iron Man 3 so much, is, like, when you set up a character and take away their powers and make them kind of be, like, make them try and respond to situations as a human. I find that really interesting.
Yeah, and I think one of the most interesting parts of that, just to cut in here really quick, is that he was kind of doing that to himself, and I felt like the self-loathing and self-affliction angle of that was really interesting as well.
I think the X-Men movies are really, they're dark and they're good character studies, and this brought a lot of it back. I don't know, Cassie, how do you feel about Days of Future Past?
So here's the thing, I don't really know that much about X-Men at all. I really like the first two movies, so I think they're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely had to do some reading before I saw this, and I wasn't the biggest fan of Days of Future Past. I think it's okay, but it's just like, eh. And it's kind of annoying, but I went into this with Mike's making a face right now for all you.
I'm just shocked.
This is an audio medium, but I liked it. I just thought it was kind of fine. The best part of this movie for me was the 70s sequences with Quicksilver, who's Magneto's illegitimate child.
But which wasn't really brought up in the movies, but like is actually a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing, and I just thought it was so good. Perfect casting with Evan Peters. The one sequence with the really slowed down.
I'm so happy you brought that up.
Gunshot sequence was amazing.
I've heard the internet refer to that as the raddest scene of the movie.
I think that was one of the best movie scenes like of the year, probably so far.
Oh my god, it made me so happy. It was so.
It was very cool.
It was really like watching that one scene was like watching a comic book come to life, and it was so funny. Like everyone in the theater, like you could feel this like happiness and energy while watching it.
Yeah, it was perfect. Evan Peters was perfect. He was channeling his like doofiness from the movie Sleepover, which if you haven't seen, you should.
I've seen.
Is that the one with the girl from Spy Kids?
Oh yeah, it
yes,
is.
Yes, it is.
Alexa Vega.
I never actually saw it.
I loved Alexa Vega when I was little. She was the best.
She was pretty great.
But yeah, oh my god, that part was just so good.
Yes.
And I saw it with my dad, who somehow knows even less about X-Men than I do. And was calling it X-Man all day over text.
If anybody doesn't know, I think one of the funniest things on the planet is listening to my parents and my grandparents get movie titles wrong.
Oh, that's so funny.
That is great.
Oh, back real quick.
He too was delighted.
He was delighted.
Back real quick to the Quicksilver thing. I think that's really interesting that you thought it was so well cast and everything, because the same character is going to be in the next Avengers movie too.
Is he playing Quicksilver?
Yeah, he's gonna be. It's Aaron Taylor Johnson as Quicksilver. They're not allowed to use
Ford Brody.
Yeah.
Hop into a 2014 Ford Brody.
Oh, God.
With all-wheel drive.
From Godzilla.
And three first names.
That's Ford Brody from the new Godzilla movie. Hopefully none of you have seen it, so don't know that.
Yeah, hopefully he'll have a better... And actually, I think Elizabeth Olsen is playing his twin sister, the Scarlet Witch, who has, like, reality-altering
powers.
Creepy! So very, very, very strange.
Wait, I think our producer just made...
Mrs.
I probably
Brody.
Won't get it, but just made a very weird noise, but,
No, yes. That was me.
Yes. Another actor I want to talk about in this is Peter Dinklage, who...
Dad said, oh, that's the South Polo.
What? Wait, what did he say?
He called him the South Pole Elf. Like, from Elf. And then he was getting angry, and he said, you don't want to make him angry.
This is just going to become a podcast about Cassie's dad.
I haven't listened to that podcast.
But anyway.
I continue.
I was really happy to see Peter Dinklage in this because he's a huge star on TV and he's probably the best part of Game of Thrones, although my favorite character on that show changes every week. But I was just reading about the reason that Bryan Singer cast him was, I think like both him and Peter Dinklage talked about this, was Peter Dinklage like seems to consider himself like, because he's a dwarf in real life, he's like something like a mutant and an outsider, and he said it really added to his character's self-loathing. And like we didn't mention it earlier, but his character is the scientist who invents the Sentinels, and he is really adamant about wiping the mutants out. Did you guys think of? Do you guys have opinions on Peter Dinklage in this?
He was great.
I thought he was the weakest part of the whole movie, to be honest.
Why is that?
I thought his character fell really flat.
You thought he would. Beige?
Guess we could call him beige. I think he's a fantastic actor. I love his work in Thrones and in Elf.
Bolivar Trask.
But
that's his name is Bolivar
yeah,
Trask.
Yeah, Bolivar Trask. I kind of felt like he didn't really give it could have been anyone playing that character and they would have played him just as well.
I just thought it was interesting that they, like, chose him, that Bryan Singer chose him specifically because of his appearance.
Yeah, and because he's Peter Dinklage. I mean, you gotta remember that, too. If Peter Dinklage wants to sign onto your film, you figure out a way to get him in the film.
That's a good point. Now, was Bolivar Trask in the comic books, like, what was his character like? I mean, in terms of appearance and things like that.
Yeah, so in the comics, there's, like, there's a couple different characters that are involved with the Sentinels, and Bolivar Trask is one of them. But there's this whole thing in the comics where, like, the people who design the Sentinels are, like, more religiously motivated. Like, they think that mutants are, like, spawn of Satan, and that they're, like, humans are, like, the, like, godchild, like, that should be inherit the Earth, and therefore it's their duty to, like, eliminate all mutants. So Trask is, like, a very important character, he's one of those guys that, like, his name's thrown around so many times in so many different ways, and, like, his son is involved and his cousin. It's just, like, anytime they need, like, a guy who wants to kill all the mutants, he's related to Trask, always. And it's just, like,
wow.
In like, video games and comics and movies, there's always some Trask that's making Sentinels, and his backstory changes a lot. But he is in the comics.
Interesting. Now, I was playing what I was going to say. Now, there was one thing that was both, like, I thought was, like, the best thing about the movie, but also, like, sometimes could work against it, was all the time travel in it. Like, there were at times where it felt, like, a little ridiculous, but the thing that I liked best about it is they didn't explain the rules that heavily, and they kind of just jumped into it right away.
That was my favorite thing about it, was, like,
it wasn't like Inception.
I don't think any new X-Men moviegoers were really, like, a huge consideration in this movie. But I think I really loved that. Obviously, they're in imminent danger and stuff, so they just sort of, like, jumped in. They were like, "All right, we have to get our shit together." And,
yes.
Like,
yeah.
Find a way to beat this thing and stop Jennifer Lawrence.
Stop Jennifer Lawrence before she trips on her way to get an Oscar again.
Before she trips on the way.
Stop her from getting any more quirky.
I agree with this whole, like, aww, time travel discussion. For me, like, there was an additional little spin on it, because the whole movie's based on, like, the fact that Kitty Pryde, who is sending Wolverine back through time, but that's not her.
I love Kitty Pryde.
Is one of my favorite characters of all time. I love Kitty Pryde, and I love Luke Cage, which is why I'm really excited for his Netflix show that's going to be coming eventually. But Kitty Pryde does not have the power to phase people back through time. She can, like, run through walls and stuff. She phases through walls, but they give her time-phasing powers in this movie with no explanation whatsoever. She hasn't had it in any of the other films. But
was she in any of the other X-Men movies?
Yeah, she was. Well, she was in the first X-Men movie, but she was played by a different actress, and she only had, like, one cameo. And then
she her, like, running through a wall.
She's in the third X-Men movie. She's, like, a semi big role with, like, a little bit of a romance with Iceman, but it's not that big. And she was, I think she's
look
a really good
Anna Paquin.
Yes, we got to see Anna. This one was, like, it was cool.
Oh my god, can we talk about the fact that Anna Paquin was in the movie for, like, a second, and it was half of her face, and she had higher building than so many other people.
Yeah, that was really
crazy. You know, it's really funny that they built her that highly, because they were trying really hard to keep, like, her and Famke James, but I don't know how to pronounce her name, and James Marsden and Famke Janssen, they were trying to keep their cameos, like, very secret, and yet they were, like, top billing on IMDb.
Yeah, well, they couldn't keep Rogue's cameo secret, because Anna Paquin had the cover of Entertainment Weekly one time. So,
Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah.
But I really,
for
it was
the
just
listeners at home, I just made a funny face because I couldn't believe that.
This is what you're not. Yeah, this is what we can't show you at home, people. But I thought it was really cool. I really like seeing all the old people again, because there was, like, one summer where I came home and, like, watched the first, like, X-Men every single day, and I really forgot how much I liked it, and, like, I just I was so happy to see Wolverine and Cyclops and Rogue and, like, all of them, like, back again. It was really, and, like, even Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, who, like, now have become an internet meme, seeing them together again was really awesome.
Yeah, this was...
I don't know if you've seen...
I liked when they held hands at the
end. Oh, that was amazing. That was so great.
That was very nice.
I had to back away from the mic for that. That's how great it was. So...
yes.
Yeah, no. So neither of you have seen X-Men Last Stand, that's right?
I have not seen Last Stand. This is the one that Brett Ratner... Oh, Cassie has seen it. This is the one that Brett Ratner directed.
Right. So, Ian, just to like let you know, like in Brett Ratner's film, which I enjoyed at the time, but also recognized was not a very good movie or a very good X-Men movie, but I liked it because like he literally kills off almost everyone important. And this movie, because they changed the timeline... kind of just fixes everything that happens in bad in X-Men The Last Stand.
So they were basically, this whole movie was trying to pretend that Brett Ratner's X-Men didn't exist.
Yeah, because Jean is killed off, Cyclops is killed off, Rogue doesn't have her powers by the end of the movie.
That's depressing.
Yeah, it's Professor X is killed off, but he like somehow switches his mind into another body. But it's just like...
What?
Yeah.
Okay, so spoiler alerts for X-Men The Last Stand as well.
Yeah, but if...
Too late for that now, but just
you,
saying.
If you haven't been spoiled for that already, you probably aren't ever going to see the movie.
Yes. But, wow. That's a lot to hear from that one.
Yeah.
But, what do you... That's a lot that they basically, like, corrected everything about the X-Men universe. Like, is that cheating or something?
I mean...
No, it was a Hot Tub Time Machine.
It was exactly like Hot Tub Time Machine.
Definitely. And also, like, it's a comic book movie. And in comic books, they do this kind of thing literally all the time. It's called, like, a retcon or you know, a reboot. And they just kind of, when they realize that something, like, that they did isn't working, like, they change it. They bring back characters. Jean Grey has died and come back in the comics more times than I've done
like
anything.
A telenovela.
It's kind of like how Kenny dies in every episode of South Park.
Yeah,
like that.
It's exactly like that.
If I could just, I just wanted to point out like two or three like really, really cool things about the movie that I loved. I really, liked the scene where Magneto shoots all the metal through Wolverine's body and then throws him into the river.
That was awesome.
For two reasons.
I laughed out loud at that part. I don't know why, but I did.
Anyway. Well, one, like, the actual image of him doing that is an homage to a classic cover where Magneto rips all of the metal out of Wolverine's skeleton, and it looks just like that, except in reverse.
Let's also just say that this is before Wolverine had any metal in him. He still just had, like, the bony claws.
Right, because he doesn't get...
Sorry, keep going, Mike. Yeah.
Bony claws.
And then I really also like the fact that they throw him in the like, bottom of the river or whatever, because that's kind of been hinted at as the only way that you could potentially kill Wolverine, is to put him in a place where he can't breathe for so long that his body just stops functioning until it's taken out. Which is really cool, mm-hmm. And I thought they were going to leave him there the whole film, which would have been just as awesome.
I thought he was legitimately going to die.
Yeah,
I was very worried for my friend.
I thought they were killing him off too, especially with Hugh Jackman saying he was going to quit, like, retire being Wolverine, but now he's changed his tune on that.
Yeah, he's getting old, and he did not
I thought he was still... I really enjoyed seeing him as Wolverine still.
I think he looks better as Wolverine... I think he looks better and more believable as Wolverine than he did even in the first movie. I think even the older he gets, the more Wolverine-y he looks to me.
I think you're right. But also, Wolverine's supposed to be like kind of an ageless character.
Right.
Yeah. And Hugh Jackman is ageless in real life.
Yeah, which is pretty good for him.
Exactly, so he could do more Les Mis movies.
The other thing that I really, really...
Les Mis 2. More Mis.
The other thing that I really, really liked is that this movie takes the bold choice with one singular line to declare that John F. Kennedy was a mutant, which was amazing.
And that Magneto tried to kill... I love...
He tried to save him.
I love that alternative view of history.
Yeah, it's amazing. And if you had... I don't know if you guys saw the propaganda for this movie or whatever. They put up a whole website with case files on the JFK assassination, but
It
all included Magneto's, like, role in it, and, like, the fact that he was... like, blamed for the assassination and everything. It was a really great website.
So cool.
And they got, like, someone who
sounds... That is pretty awesome.
They got someone who sounds just like the guy who does the History Channel, like, documentaries and, like, narrate videos for it. It was amazing.
And they had a Nixon in this movie, too.
Oh, yeah, they did. He was great.
He was pretty good, I thought. I really liked, the changing history thing.
I love movie Nixons.
Yeah, movie Nixons are great. I love...
They're hilarious.
I've started to like movies where they kind of alter and change history, because movies that play history, it's really impossible to portray history accurately, like, in a movie, like, completely, and make it interesting. History, so why not turn JFK into a mutant? It makes it so much more interesting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, JFK's already awesome to begin with, but make him a mutant, he's even better.
Exactly, I agree. So do we have, I just wanted some, maybe we can all say some final thoughts on Days of Future Past. I almost said The Last Stand, don't know why, but Days of Future Past, I really enjoyed this. I was not really looking forward to it coming in, but at the end, I really liked it. I just thought it was really crazily ambitious in its story, that it was a sequel to a prequel and a sequel all in one. I thought that it kind of, like, took everything that I thought a lot of big blockbusters have been doing wrong and doing it right. There was a lot of great character development. They raised the stakes. Like we were saying before, I really thought Wolverine was going to die. But it was overall, like, it was a really good 2 hours at the movies. And I feel like I want to be an X-Men fan again. What are your all final thoughts? Mike just cheered. Yeah.
It was fine.
Okay. All right. Just fine.
Wow.
If you want to just say fine.
That's my passive aggressive review of this movie.
Passive aggressive reviews with Passy. With Cassie.
I like
Passy.
With Passy.
and Mike, your final thoughts?
This movie was phenomenal. I mean, when else are you gonna get to see Iceman's head crushed into, like, ice bits in the first 10 minutes of the movie, and Colossus ripped in half? With just amazing time travel stuff, great stuff in the past, and just overall fun and darkness, but darkness that turns into hope at the end. I mean, I think as a little kid, I probably would have been absolutely scarred and horrified, but at the end, I think I would have been really happy when everyone came back together. So this movie was...
Yeah, that was nice.
This movie was great. I'd give it an 8 or 9 out of 10 for me.
And I don't believe in star ratings, but we averaged out to, we really liked it, but also some of us just thought it was fine. But anyway, still go see X-Men Days of Future Past. It's way better than Godzilla. I think you could all agree with that.
I'm going to see it again tomorrow, so.
Oh, wow. We'll see what you think of it a second time.
How special.
That includes our review of Days of Future Past.
We're concluding it.
We are concluding our review of Days of Future Past, but we're going to take one more quick break, and we'll be right back. Back to the Real Deal Podcast, everybody. Before we go, as always, we're going to do a little question of the week. This week, there was recent news that second season of True Detective, we still don't know who the cast is, but we know that there will be 3 leads. So there will be a trio of detectives as opposed to 2. That means there could be 3 Matthew McConaughey's. Who knows? But anyway, there's...
Or are there already 3?
If you're a part of... good question. But if you're a part of the Twitterverse, the Twitter sphere, there's a fun hashtag game that's just called True Detective Season 2. And when True Detective Season 1 ended, the hashtag was just, like, people, like, posting, like, their favorite, like, pop culture duos or things from movies and TV shows and saying this is who they'd want for Season 2 of True Detective. Like, for example, you might do Bert and Ernie or Troy and Abed. But now people have been doing trios, and it's been a lot of fun. There was a lot of really good ones on Twitter yesterday, but I decided we're going to play the True Detective Season 2 game right here on the Real Deal Podcast. Thank you, Cassie. But so we're going to do just a little ground rules. This is the game is a lot of fun because you can do any trio that's either real or made up, fiction, nonfiction, dead or alive. So you could even bring dead people back for this, which is actually what I'm going to do. For my trio, I had a few different options I was weighing out, but I decided that I would ideally do Roy Scheider, Richard Dreyfuss, and Robert Shaw from Jaws. Because, you know, that movie's kind of a detective story. It's about three guys hunting a mysterious great white shark that they can't find. And if I could bring them all back to life and reenact that scene where they're all on the boat sharing their shark stories, that would be pretty amazing. But applying that to other things, they all just had the three of them. I don't know how to, like, I think the best way that, like, a trio can have chemistry is that, like, there doesn't feel like there's an odd man out. And in that one, they all kind of felt like they were giving each other equal time. And it's just, like, I would love to see that in a True Detective season for any trio they get. Cassie, who would you choose for True Detective season 2?
Bacon, lettuce, and tomato.
Kevin Bacon?
Yeah, Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin lettuce and Kevin tomato. but really, I would choose Kyle Chandler, Connie Britton, and Taylor Kitsch. Or another famous trio, Clear Eyes, Full Hearts, Can't Lose.
Yes! That is the best trio I could think of.
But it'll be in California, not Texas.
Who knows? They could always. They would probably do well in California as well, I think.
Yeah, Taylor Kitsch has the hair for it.
Yes, exactly. He has the California hair. But just so you all know, they're from the TV show Friday Night Lights. And if they were still just doing the duo for this season of True Detective, then I think that they could have just done Connie Britton and Kyle Chandler, and that would have been amazing because they were like the best married couple on TV.
The Taylors.
Yes, exactly. And what about you, Mike? Who would you choose as your trio?
Well, back when they were doing duos, I was going to say Michael Jackson and Prince, but since we're keeping it to trios now, I'll go with the ever exciting group of Bryan Cranston, Aaron Paul, and Bob Odenkirk, because who wouldn't love to see them back on TV together?
Oh my God, I would.
It would just be amazing. It would be incredible.
It would be, and we will be seeing Bob Odenkirk on Better Call Saul. He's also on Fargo right now, but won't see them all together completely. And we would even allow, I would probably, would you say that Vince Gilligan would be allowed to get on board for this?
Sure. Yeah,
he better be.
That would be amazing.
Because who else could write for them? And just throw Jonathan Banks in there and just give us another season of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, just turn True Detective into Breaking Bad. Keep the True Detective theme, and it'll all be great.
It'd be great. It'd be doing great.
Great. All right. Great.
Great. Great. Okay. Those are just a few. I had so many more, and most of them were just combinations of actors from heavyweights. but if you have a creative True Detective season 2, it could be one you've posted on Twitter or haven't posted on Twitter. We're not picky. Just send it over to us. You could send it to my email address, ian@realdealblog. That's Ian, I-A-N, at real, spelled R-E-E-L. dealblog.com. The rest of the words are spelled normal. So ian@realdealblog.com. Pretend you're a casting director. Tell us who you'd cast. Unfortunately, that's going to bring us to the end of our show. Just one more thing before we go, as always. Just want to say we're all going to say goodbye and just little things about us. Mike, thank you so much for joining us this week. It's always awesome to have you on.
Of course. Thanks for having me back. You know I love coming on and talk about comics or just films in general, but this is a lot of fun.
Mike, can you tell us about maybe where can we find some of your work? Anything that you're working on this week that's interesting or exciting?
Sure. Yeah, I'm actually working on a bunch of short stuff that I'm writing right now. So I would see if you can look for some YouTube videos going up soon that I'm working on finding people to film with. And in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at MixmasterMike91. I say funny things there, and I'll be around. So keep an eye on me.
I will. And Cassie, can we find anything from you this week?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, as always, at Cassie Grimaldi, and Cassie spelled C-A-S-S-I-E. And you can check out some writing I have been doing for this lovely website called Screen Robot, and another website called The Richest. So, yeah.
And what are the, would it just be screenrobot.com and therichest.com?
Yep, those are, that's what they're called.
And we'll look, is there anything we should look out for in general, or?
I don't know. Am I missing something?
Look out, world, no. It's Cassie Grimaldi.
I was just going to ask about, like, what articles you might be working on, but if you don't want to mention those, that's okay. We'll just keep an eye out for your name.
Yeah.
And, yes. And as always, you can find me on Twitter at Ian0592. You can also find the Real Deal Twitter at RealDealIan, Real_Deal_Ian. And, of course, you can find old reviews we've written. My Days of Future Past review is up. Lists, TV reviews, interviews, other stuff like that at RealDealBlog.com. That's Real spelled R-E-E-L, DealBlog.com. You can find the podcast there, and you can also find it up on iTunes, so go and subscribe to us there. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us. We hope you'll keep listening as well. But as always, 1, 2, 3,
keep it real.
Oh, keep it real.
Oh, come on.
I got it that
time. One more time. 3, 2, 1,
keep it real.
That's
better.